Welcome to The Pie. I'm your host, Tess Vigeland. Economists are always talking about the pie, how it grows and shrinks, how it's sliced, who gets the biggest share. In this show, we're talking about the most pressing matters of the day, seen through the lens of economics. The Pie is a production of the University of Chicago's Becker Friedman Institute. And in this episode, we're all about trains, buses, and automobiles. Specifically, what cities can do to mitigate transit issues. You may have heard that New York City is set to become the first American city to implement congestion pricing. Vehicles coming in and out of parts of Manhattan would have to pay a toll for the privilege, depending on what time their drivers are wanting to do so. Other major world cities, including London, Stockholm, Singapore, already do this. New Jersey is challenging the plan in federal court, so it may not happen in New York. But meantime, today we're going to hear about research that looks at the efficacy of this kind of program and how cell phone data is showing exactly how and where people are commuting in Chicago.
So I'm Milena Almagro. I'm an assistant professor at the Booth School of Business from the University of Chicago in the micro group. And my favorite pie is key lime pie.
So, Milena, we're talking today about transportation and the ways in which cities are trying to combat gridlock. You live in Chicago there right now. I'm curious what your traffic situation is like. How much do you complain about it?
Well, I'm very lucky because I live in Pilsen, which is the southwest of the city. So I don't get any traffic.
But oh, okay.
Anytime that I have to go a little bit up north from my place, as soon as I pass Pilsen, traffic is a mess.
Oh, boy. Okay, so you relate to your research then.
I do. And it's actually very interesting because to go from my place to Hyde Park, like if you want to take public transit, it takes roughly like 45, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
That's more than 10 minutes just to get to the train station. Whereas by car, it only takes 15 minutes.
Oh, interesting.
So that type of trade-off is kind of like one of the key trade-offs that I would want to have in mind when doing this type of research. And you see that big difference. So what is it that I'm going to do? I'm going to use my car, of course.
Of course.
Thankfully, I have the resources to have a car, but many people don't.
Well, can you give us a sense of how bad the traffic and congestion problem is overall in this country? And some of the economic costs associated with that.
So the World Economic Forum estimated that the cost of congestion in the U.S. was $87 billion. Just to give you a sense of how much this is going to cost per person in the U.S., this is going to be about $260 per year.
Per man, woman, and child?
Correct.
Wow. It doesn't seem like a lot of money individually, but $87 billion is not chump change.
Yeah, absolutely.
How are we doing when it comes to public transit in the U.S.?
You know, the U.S. is behind when it comes to public transit relative to other developed countries, such as European countries. Just to give you a sense, on average, only 1/10 of the trips that take place in the U.S. are done using some form of public transit. And the remaining 90% of the trips are done using private alternatives such as private cars.
I suppose that's not truly surprising. It is, it's a country full of cars, right? So let's run through some of the mitigation efforts that cities have tried over the last few decades or so. What are some of the ideas? I know congestion pricing is one of them, tolls, free public transit. Can you take us through some of those?
Congestion pricing is still at a very early stage in the U.S. The city of New York is trying to implement some cordon pricing. This is something that has been implemented in some European cities, such as Stockholm or London, even in Singapore. I think the U.S. Has mostly focused more on subsidizing public transit. And this fact was something that was very surprising to us and kind of the first fact that motivated this research, which is that the average trip that somebody takes in the U.S. almost three quarters of the cost of that trip is subsidized by some form of government in the US.
How so?
I guess governments want to incentivize public transit, and if you don't have enough money to put into the transportation agencies, these agencies will go totally bankrupt.
What did you want to measure in this research, and how did you go about doing that?
So our first idea was to understand if the policies that are already in place could be improved. And the policies that are in place for the case of Chicago is some form of public transit subsidy. The 25% that is subsidized, that's a number for the country. For the case of Chicago, the CTA or the city of Chicago is subsidizing 40% of the cost of your trip. Now, the first question is like whether this is the right amount of for a subsidy. And second is whether governments should think only about subsidizing public transit or improving public transit, or we should think about transportation policies that could involve some form of road pricing that is becoming more and more popular throughout the world.
So you decided, hey, we're in a city that deals with these questions every day, right? Deals with traffic every day. So let's take a look at Chicago's current infrastructure. So first, for those who aren't familiar, can you describe Chicago's public transit system? You just mentioned the CTA, the Chicago Transit Authority. Talk a little bit about the L and how much freeway there is around there, buses. What's available to folks in Chicago?
Just to give you a sense, Chicago is kind of a city that has two cities. You have the north of Chicago, which is where high-income people live, and the south of Chicago, which is where minorities and low-income people live. So we have a very large network of buses for the city of Chicago. I think we have over 1,000 bus lines throughout the city, spread throughout the city. However, this is not the case for trains. So you see that there is a lot of coverage in terms of like the train network for the north part of the city of Chicago, whereas the south sees like way more restricted coverage relative to richer areas. And the L is kind of a subway, but it's a subway that goes overground. So it's called the L because it's the L for elevated.
So when you decided to kind of take a look at the efficacy of Chicago's system and who was using it and where and when and what was subsidized, how did you go about measuring that?
So we took location data from your mobile phone, from the mobile phone of the people living in Chicago. And I don't know if people are aware, but whenever you use an app that uses location services, your mobile phone is emitting something that is called pings, that is recording your latitude, longitude, along with a timestamp. So we can track devices, mobile phone devices over time. And with those pings, what we could do is quantify whether people were moving or not, and whether they were moving faster than like walking speed. We classify you as moving using some kind of motorized mode of transportation. This data set, what gives us is the universe of trips for the city of Chicago. Actually, we could do this for the entire US, but for this particular paper, we focus only on the city of Chicago. And with this data set, what we did is the CTA and the MIT have a partnership in which the CTA shares the information about the individual swipes for public transit with MIT. So basically, we see whenever somebody goes into a bus or when somebody enters one subway station. And with this data set, we kind of construct the universe of public transit trips. Another nice thing about the city of Chicago is that they publish the universe of ride-hailing trips, meaning Uber and Lyft. So with the CTA public transit trips and the ride-hailing and Uber trips, we were kind of like constructing the universe of trips that were not done by private cars. Of course, observing private car trips is very hard because that's not recorded anywhere. But what we did was, with our mobile phone data, we took that as the universe of trips. And then we subtracted the trips that we could see in some other source of data. So just to fix ideas, imagine that we see that from Hyde Park to the Loop at 5 p.m. on a Wednesday, we see 100 people traveling, and we see that 30% of those are traveling by public transit, 10% of 10 of those are traveling by Uber. We're going to infer that the remaining of those trips are going to be car trips.
So then you're trying to figure out policy-wise what kind of mitigation factors work best. And as part of that, you're interested in how different income categories used these systems, right? And you talked about the higher income up in the north of Chicago, lower income and minorities in the south of Chicago. So how did you blend those data sets to look at that efficacy question?
Yeah. So one of the things that we discovered in this research was that the residential segregation that you see for the city of Chicago kind of translates into something that we call a traveling segregation, meaning that the low-income people tend to stay in the south, the high-income people tend to travel more in the north of the city. Then other things that we observe that are probably less surprising or less obvious exposed is that lower-income people tend to use public transit more, especially buses, because as I said before, the network of buses is very spread out throughout the city of Chicago. Middle-income people are the ones that are going to rely more on cars. And high-income people, they are going to use their car. They're also going to be the heavy users of Uber and Lyft. And they're also going to use a lot trains because, as I mentioned before, the train network in the north of Chicago is way better than the coverage that the L has in the south side of Chicago. And there are a lot of places where high-income people live or commute or work that have very good access to trains. Think about the Loop. So we saw how different people of different income groups were choosing different modes of transportation, more or less with the patterns that I just described. And these patterns, these choices, were informing us about the preferences of these people for like traveling there with a faster mode of transportation and pay more versus traveling at a lower speed but paying less. And what we find in our research is that lower income people are way more sensitive to public transit prices than higher income people. This in the literature of transportation is something called the value of time, meaning that this utility that you get from traveling one more hour or one more minute. And we find that this is very correlated with wages. So for example, we see that for higher income people, their value of time is going to be around $30. And for lower income people, it's going to be around like $4. So as you can think, lower income people have lower wages than higher income people. And this is something that the literature on transportation has found over and over again, this type of correlation between the value of time and your income.
So then what are you doing with that result in terms of looking again at public policy and whether there should be congestion pricing or more free transit? What do these figures tell you?
So once we've estimated the value of time for these different type of consumers, what we did is to understand how different choices of people, whether like people travel by car or by public transit, how that was going to impact the congestion in the city. So basically what we did is we put the city of Chicago in a computer and we model it as a something that we call directed graph. So imagine you have nodes and you have edges connecting those nodes, and then you can see cars going through those edges. And in our computer, we saw the number of cars going through those ages, and we were able to tell, okay, if we see 100 cars, this is going to be the speed, or if we see two cars, this is going to be the speed. So we put this model of the city of Chicago through the computer with the preferences that I was telling you before. And what we tried to do is think about what the government should do. Now that we understand how much people are willing to pay to travel by car or to travel by public transit and how they are trading off price and time, the government might want to think about what's the optimal price of public transit or what should be the optimal frequency of public transit or what should be the optimal price of road pricing for cars. And what we found running this model of the city of Chicago through the computer is that the government should make public transit cheaper than what it actually is. And it should increase the frequency of trains, but it should decrease the frequency of buses. The reason for this discrepancy is twofold. Is, as I told you, trains tend to serve higher income people or tend to serve more higher income people than buses. And you know that the value of time, as I said before, the value of time of these travelers is higher. So this is going to imply higher benefits to serve these consumers for the government. Now, the other thing that's happening is that buses in the city of Chicago are running almost empty. So the cost per passenger per hour of travel in a bus is roughly $10. You think that this number maybe is not too high, but when you put this in context of what an Uber trip costs, the average Uber trip for the sample period that we're looking at is $9. So this tells you that running a bus, the cost of a bus per passenger is very, very high. And the reason for that is that many, many routes are running almost empty.
This obviously was research that was very focused on a singular city, right? I mean, the third largest city in the country, sure, but still only a singular city. Do you think that there are lessons coming out of that research that could apply to any major urban area that has, you know, a decent public transit system?
I think in the U.S. you have one big outlier, which is New York.
Right.
And it's interesting that in many transportation studies that do some kind of cross-city analysis, they tend to drop New York because it's kind of an outlier.
Because there is so much transit there.
There's so much transit, and transit is highly utilized.
Yeah.
So
nobody wants to drive a car in Manhattan.
Absolutely. I lived in Manhattan for 7 years, and it was faster to travel by subway than to travel by Uber.
Right,
sometimes.
Right.
So, or most of the time, I would say. But for the rest of the American cities, I think one lesson that we want to learn from this is that you want to reduce the cost per passenger, especially for public transit. Public transit has something called economies of scale, which is the fixed cost is going to be very large. The marginal cost of one extra passenger is not going to be that large. So you want to reduce that average cost per passenger. And you want to do that either through trying to move people from cars into public transit with road pricing or by reducing the frequency, reducing the cost of this public transit, or maybe by incentivizing people to use public transit by providing with more generous public transit subsidies.
So does this research tell you which one of those three options is the better bet? Or does it really just depend entirely city to city what the situation is?
I think the numbers are going to be city to city dependent. What I do think is a result that is going to apply qualitatively to other cities in the US is that you want to do a combination between road pricing and public transit subsidies. The reason for that is that in most of US cities, transportation agencies are running a loss, meaning that the money that they collect from fares is lower than the money that it costs to run the system. Why is it so good to do a combination of road prices and public transit subsidies? Because with road pricing, you are going to start collecting a ton of revenue. And all of that revenue that you collect, it could be used to subsidize public transit. so that transportation agencies are not so financially constrained.
I'm curious, if you were in charge of figuring out how to fix traffic congestion in Chicago and some of the inequality in public transit, what would you say?
So I would definitely push for having some form of road pricing. I know that politically this might not be very feasible because it's regressive. What we find is that consumers lose a lot from this, especially for the city of Chicago or for other cities that rely a lot on cars. Just to give you a number, the 90% of trips that are taking are done using private cars in the city, in the US. This number is 70% for the city of Chicago. So 7 out of 10 trips in the city of Chicago are done using private cars. So you want to start taxing these people because, or these trips, because from public finance, we know that you have to tax externalities. But in order to curb the regressivity of this policy, what you could do is, first of all, get this money and invest it in public transit. Or you can even rebate this money back to consumers with some form of like lump sum check with your annual tax returns or some other form of redistribution.
So I started this chat with you by asking about your own commuting patterns. If there were road congestion pricing implemented, what would that do for you?
I mean, I would have to pay for it.
You would have to pay more.
I would have to pay for it, but like, I don't mind paying for it because I know that I'm causing an externality. And actually, my commute is kind of the average in terms of length of kilometers or miles that I'm driving. So what we find with our road pricing, optimal prices that we find, is that I will have to pay, or the average commuter will have to pay, about $14 per day.
Would that be enough to get you to into public transit? Even though it would take you longer?
I don't think so. Like, I must say that...
Probably not, yeah.
I'm European. Probably many people can tell that I have a Spanish accent. So I'm very pro-public transit. But you have to do public transit accessible for people. Living in Chicago, walking like 15 minutes just to go to the train station seems like an overkill, especially in the winter.
Oh, geez, yeah.
To be honest, now I love my car. And I shouldn't say this because I'm betraying my European spirit.
Welcome to America.
but I love like my car. So it's going to be very hard for me to switch to another form of transportation at this point. But, you know, like if you give me $200 to travel by public transit, probably I would do it. So just what's the price?
Right, and make it easier so you don't have to walk 15 minutes in a blizzard to get to the train station.
Yeah.
Milena Almagro, thank you so much. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Tess.
The Pie is a production of the Becker Friedman Institute for Economics and part of the University of Chicago Podcast Network. If you'd like to keep in touch with the latest economic research from the University of Chicago, you can visit bfi.uchicago.edu/subscribe. If you're getting a lot out of the research that we discuss on this show, there's another University of Chicago Podcast Network show that you should check out. It's called Capital Isn't. This podcast uses the latest economic thinking to zero in on the ways that capitalism is, and more often isn't, working today. From the morality of a wealth tax, to how to reboot healthcare, to who really benefits from ESG, Capital Isn't clearly explains how capitalism can go wrong and what we can do about it. Listen to Capital Isn't, part of the University of Chicago Podcast Network. Our theme music was composed by Story Mechanics, production assistants from the BFI Communications team. I'm Tess Vigeland, your host and executive producer. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.